Congress, in particular. Dirac was getting along in years.
Yes.
And it was a really productive years were passed, but I guess Stromberg was too, but he was there early in the period I was there.
He had Einstein's study at Princeton.
Uh-huh.
And he had been director of Yerkes and McDonald. Then he went back and had Niels Bohr's chair in Copenhagen. And was chairman of the Science Council and chairman of the I don't have the title quite right. And I visited them in 75.
Well, I left in the spring, early summer of 74, having been offered this position here. But it was too good to turn down. When I was at Princeton, I came to know Haverford quite well, and was offered a job there. I didn't take it because of the research opportunities at Princeton being so special. But I visited Haverford three or four times and got to know it as a liberal arts college, and found that the whole idea of a liberal arts college as being a very attractive one. So at Stony Brook, in my eighth year, I remember feeling a little on the fence. Was I going to go into administration full-time or back to scholarship and teaching full-time? I didn't want to keep straddling that fence.
And every now and then you do get, you come to the fork,
yeah,
in your life,
and that was one.
Yeah.
So I left feeling very good about Stony Brook, but the job here was quite an attraction.
Well, your father I'm a believer in the influence of the genes. You were exposed to music in the family.
Yeah.
He played the piano.
Mm-hmm. Still do.
Good. So you had them.
I had other interests.
Other interests.
Yeah. Well, there are a few recollections I have of those years that I often thought about. One of them had to do with the unrest over the Vietnam War and the drug raids, and maybe all of this was a little harder for us at Stony Brook in those years because we didn't have the roots, that we didn't have the traditions that would have been a help in those stresses. But I remember a faculty meeting that was being held in a chemistry department lecture hall. There was a lot of noise outside and banging on the door, and I think Max Dresden was officiating at that meeting, and he went up to find out who wanted to come in, and it was the head of the Student Government Association, who said there were 2,000 students outside and he didn't think he could keep them out any longer, and he was insisting that the faculty meeting be open. And I remember distinctly we all felt quite trapped in that lecture hall under those circumstances and very uncomfortable. And Max came down, sat on the chemistry lecture bench. He propped himself up and sat on the edge of the demonstration table with his legs swinging free in the most relaxed possible way, which helped to put people at ease. And opened a brief debate about what we should do. And we decided very quickly to move to the gym. And we did. We left the lecture hall, and the chemistry department wasn't very far from the gym. And I remember walking with some faculty colleagues who were at the point with me in the line, down a double line of students lining the walk. They must have been six deep on both sides, lining the walk from the chemistry building to the gym. And when we got to the gym, there were chairs set up on the basketball court for the faculty, and the students sat in the bleachers. And that was the beginning of a long period of open faculty meetings where anybody who wanted to could come and listen. And Jerry Singer was not at that moment, but later on, Jerry Singer was chair of the Faculty Senate. I've got the right word for what the organization was. He presided over a lot of those meetings, and I remember Max's handling of the situation that day, which was brilliant.
Yeah.
And then I remember Jerry Singer presiding over a lot of those meetings where...
He was a psychologist.
Yeah. But he did an extremely good job. The sense of humor that he was able to bring to bear just when it was needed. And part of what we were debating in Jerry Singer's time as chair was the question of whether the university should have any Department of Defense research contracts. And that became the issue. We had two, as I recall. They were both U.S. Army Corps of Engineers contracts, and one of them had to do with the salt marsh ecology in Flax Pond, the study there. The other had to do with the beach erosion question of some sort.
Those are contracts for the Army.
Army Corps of Engineers, funded through the Department of Defense, DOD.
Right.
It didn't matter that they were not war-related. It was a question of symbolism.
Sure.
The students were insisting that we not associate ourselves in any way with what some of them still call the War Department.
Now, what year was this?
Well, this all had to be 69... 70.
69, 70. I was on leave.
Because
I went there.
When Kent State and Cambodia came in May of 1970, the whole institution became united. Just absolutely no. All the divisions seemed to disappear, and a lot of the unrest disappeared. But that. That incident was, I thought, highly dramatic.
Yeah.
Another thing that happened to me personally, which I found important, it reflected the fact that not everybody was thinking the same way, because it was either in May of 69 or May of 70, probably it was 1970, when there was a vote to suspend classes at the end of the year, and I think it was even optional whether you took your final exam. I don't recall, but there was a really drastic move right at the end of the year to allow more time for discussions about Vietnam and about what was going on in the world. Relieve the academic pressures. People were allowed to take incompletes in a new way. Of course, there were a lot of bomb scares going on, too. We were evacuating buildings all the time. It was hard to study. But I remember deciding that I would go on giving my lectures in the sophomore course in modern physics that I was giving for those students who wanted to. And that I would give a final exam for those who wanted to take it. And I don't remember all the details of the university's policy at that time, but the important point was that I was going on with my lectures. And I remember walking into the lecture hall the first day after these decisions were made by the university, and the first time I was meeting my students, and there were quite a few there. I think there were about 150 in the class, students. And they all broke out into applause. And those were the students who wanted to keep on learning. They weren't interested in all of the disruption and the strike and all of that. And so I went right on through the course and with that group, getting the final exam. I don't remember what happened to all the others. But there were, nobody knew quite what to do. I mean, the faculty was uncertain about its position. Different departments had different views, different individuals had different views. It was a very trying period. So those are two stories, two incidents that I remember. I also remember David Fox calling me one night after I'd gone to bed, actually, and asking if I would come in later that night to stand guard in the physics department. And there was a period there when the faculty was taking turns standing watch, as it were, in the physics building because of fear that kids might break in and be damaged to a laboratory. One faculty member's office, I think, in the theater department was actually burned in that period. At least there was a fire in it. And there were some people who were really up to no good. Made it extremely difficult.
It was a small group.
They caused a hell of a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And
that's Colin.
Oh, I remember that name.
Yeah.
So those are some recollections.
Well, that's fine. That's fine. It's not going to be easy to write a history of this.
Well, now who's going to do this? Is this?
I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I'm working.
I would just end by saying that I think it's very important that the history be done, because I don't think there were many institutions that were brand new with the aspirations that Stony Brook had at that particular time in American history. And so the circumstances of it all were unique.
Yes.
And we were learning a tremendous amount as we went. If I have an institutional view, it's because I had that experience with the administration. I was working with a good many departments on the science development grant.
Yeah.
And so I knew more people outside my department than probably some others did. So I certainly remember Herbert Weisinger. Deanship of the graduate school.
Right.
And as I recall, he was a very strong, outspoken advocate for the humanities, and that was a good thing. I was very fond of Pat Hill in the philosophy department and thought a great deal of him. The philosophers were right in the same building with us there for quite a while.
That's the major, I think, piece of unfinished business. The humanities are scattered in six different places.
Not with a center. The social sciences got a center.
Yes.
While I was there.
Yes.
They came together.
They have the word humanities over the old English,
English building?
English building.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's only the English people. Languages in the left. In the library.
Mm-hmm. I remember Alfred Kazin.
Yes.
Was there.
Yeah.
I have to say another thing, too. The people whose influence was very important in those days, Frank Yang was one of them.
Yes.
There was some criticism of the star system, but I think it really worked. But it wasn't just that Frank was a brilliant physicist with a Nobel Prize. He had He had a dignity. His qualities as a scholar were very visible. The qualities of his mind. And that impressed people.
Yes.
And he was not one to take sides either. I mean, he tried to understand what was going on and to be even-handed. So I think in ways, I don't know how many people knew him, but I felt that his influence was very steadying and very much one of sort of holding the banner for scholarship and excellence. And
I think it still is.
High. And he taught freshman physics courses. He didn't just teach the graduate students in the Institute for Theoretical Physics. He was a very important figure in those years. And Max Dresden was certainly another one.
Yes.
Politically tremendously active. He loved it.
Right.
But he did it very well.
Yes. Well, I think a good many people who have left Stony Brook have gone on to important positions elsewhere. I think you're an example. Bill Moran is an example. Chris Johnny himself, Ed Pellegrino,
mm-hmm.
former president of Catholic University, and now director of the Kennedy Center for Ethics.
I remember some of the very first meetings at which the concept of a hospital and a medical center were being discussed. I think you were attending them too. And Johnny and Ed and Bentley. And we were in a conference room on the east side of the library. Mm-hmm. And it became clear very quickly that Ed Pellegrino was the kind of person who was going to have his way. And there must have been some real difficulties there, because both Ed and Johnny were pretty strong characters.
Yes.
And Ed didn't want to be second to anybody.
Well, Ed knew had a very clear picture on the basis of his past experience and his point of view.
Somebody who remembers that.